like to talk to you now about the remedy of havingness. Acceptance level and donor level are the two monitoring factors in the remedy of havingness. When we speak of the remedy of havingness, we are speaking of the preclear's own mock-ups, own universe, or composites of his and other people's universes. We are not talking about the physical universe when we say remedy of havingness. We can remedy his havingness of parts of the physical universe only, evidently, by remedying his havingness in his own bank. This is a peculiarity, but it's often noted and is extremely useful for an auditor to know. That is to say, could we ask somebody to go around and stuff his pockets full of sand and so forth in order to remedy his havingness? Well, no. It's been tried. A change of space between two large masses, the centers of two large masses, has been tried. Many things have been tried, and it doesn't seem to work out in the physical universe. That, of course, I can make with some reservation. I say it's a peculiarity. It's something that's not quite on the groove. There may be some method of remedying havingness in the physical universe. I know that if somebody loses something in the physical universe, it certainly unremedies his own havingness like Matt. Therefore, there ought to be some method of reversing the process. But here we very well may be looking at the primary symptom in the dwindling spiral. Because an individual can lose physical universe objects and cannot himself actually really gain a physical universe object, we would get, of course, a manifestation which could well cause such a thing as the dwindling spiral, of an individual continuing to get worse as he went along the track rather than getting better. It would be one of those things which would be so lopsided that it would bring about very bad repercussions. The remedy of havingness of the preclear, then, consists of remedying his own mass with energy which he himself is either mocking up or is taking out of the bank or doing something with. There are people around that auditors call energy thieves. This is not my word or phrase or my observation particularly. But I hear about this so often that I had better tell you something about it rather than to just let it slide by. There is the person who is an energy thief. This person, I suppose in olden times they might have called them vampires or something of the sort. But this individual at least, through his conversation, gives the other individual to believe that the other individual has less energy. Now, this person would also be a purpose thief. He would also try to say that purposes were not so good and the other individual didn't have all the purposes he could think of, really, and he shouldn't carry them out. He probably didn't have enough energy to do it, and the poor fellow. One of the methods of being an energy thief would be to sympathize with other people's tiredness and so hang them up in tiredness. Sympathize with how hard they had to work. In other words, a Communist Party agitator. That's actually how they get in. The poor workman, you know, he has to work. Actually, anybody who is pitied because he has to work, this doesn't make sense, and it shouldn't make sense to him, but it does. The only joy in work is work. The only reason you would ever have to handle any particle of effort would be because it is fun to handle effort particles, that's all. It's not that you would get a reward or get paid for work done or handling particles. If it isn't fun to handle the particle, then there's no pay possible. For instance, your father and mother wanted you to be maybe very gratuitous for having been raised and caused all that trouble and all that work and slavery and so forth. And if they're telling you at that late state that you should have a great deal of gratitude on the thing, you should immediately assume the only truth there is on the situation, and that is that if it isn't fun to have done it, there's no pay possible. So your gratitude is completely aside from the point. If it wasn't fun to raise you and change your diapers, that's their hard luck, not yours. It's not a question of no responsibility. This thing of reward, pay, honors, all that sort of thing is a sort of a collapsing track mechanism. They try to take an effort particle and then convert it into something else. Well, it's not a bad operation, getting paid for what you do and all that sort of thing, but getting paid for what you do will never recompense doing something which is not in itself recompense for doing. No matter what pay you got, if you didn't enjoy doing it, skip it. And you will always be in a very healthy state of mind with regard to effort. When you start doing things just because you're going to be paid for them or rewarded, you find out that your ability to handle effort starts to cave in. Now, effort particles are those particles which we're interested in when we say remedy of havingness. We are interested in effort particles. Don't think for a moment that Thetan doesn't want them. Don't think that just because his bank is so loaded up that he can hardly walk, that he is content to get rid of one of them. He may have the biggest jam and crush and ridge set up around him that you could imagine. And you say, well, obviously the thing's really wrong with this fellow is that he has too many of these ridges. No, no, he doesn't have enough. Oh, you say he has 8 times as many as any other being we have ever met. Okay, he doesn't have enough, because what determines this whole thing? Consideration. His consideration is regardless of how much energy he has around him, he doesn't have enough. What you process is his consideration, not his quantity. Auditing is not a problem in quantity. It is a problem in altering considerations. Therefore, when we address the problem of havingness, we are trying to remedy the havingness of the individual in such a manner as to alter his consideration of how much havingness he has to have. That is our direction in the remedy of havingness. You'll find that if you remedy havingness on a preclear for 50 hours of auditing or something like this, I mean, from time to time you remedy his havingness, he'll get less and less anxious to have his havingness remedied. He'll get less and less nervous about effort particles. What's happening there? His consideration has become that when he needs energy particles, he can have them. He's finally learned this. And so after that, he's not so concerned about it. But supposing this fellow has tremendous deposits of energy sitting around all over the place, and yet evidently can't have a thing, what's wrong with him? Very simple. He doesn't have anything he's got. His consideration is that although he has a great many things, he doesn't have any of them. He doesn't have them. His consideration there is what's at fault, not the amount of energy. All right, the consideration of havingness, then, would bring in quality. Quantity is not in question. Quality of havingness is. What is acceptable to a human being? What would a human being give away? What would a human being receive? What's acceptable to him? We discover a mechanism, then, that an individual has erected barriers against certain qualities of objects and actions. He's raised barriers against these things. The fellow said, I don't like eggs. You know, he's raised a barrier against eggs. Well, after a while, enough eggs accumulate, mock-ups of eggs and so forth, will accumulate on the outside of this screen. And enough, you might say, complete absence of eggs will occur on the inside of the screen. The definition of the screen is a no-egg screen, you see. That the screen will invert. Bing. And you find this individual with a tremendous craving for eggs. What happened? Very mechanical. He just set up the screen against eggs, and it became overweighted with all the eggs he ever resisted. And the next thing you know, why, the screen collapses on him, and he finds himself on the gotta-have-egg side. The screen will gradually turn on him into a consideration that eggs are absolutely vital and necessary. Now, let's look at that in terms of women. Let's say some man has erected a barrier toward very ugly women. You know, he won't have anything to do with very ugly women. Next thing you know, it's all he's enamored with. What happened? He raised the barrier. It got overweighted. Slipped. Bing. He stuck with the craving side of the screen. Now, let's go a little bit higher. And this individual raised a barrier against beautiful women. Well, after a while, his acceptance level was beautiful women. So he says, well, I don't like ugly women. So he raised the second barrier, and pang. Truth of the matter is, to start out with, he didn't like any women. Well, we'll find somebody with a qualification as to quality on everything under the sun, moon, and stars. And there are a lot of people walking around who, quote, can't get mock-ups of any kind, unquote, who are better defined as people who have not been offered or had suggested to them mock-ups which they could get. And the reason why the fellow can't get mock-ups is the kind of mock-up he can get has never been brought to his attention. That's because the society itself has certain provisos and rules and laws regarding acceptance level. The social acceptance level of the society at large is one acceptance level, and the acceptance level of the preclear is quite another acceptance level. If you wanted to use this in business, you would learn a great deal about advertising. You would simply go around and find out the acceptance level of people on the product. How would you find this out? You would simply have them mock up the product in various forms until you found a form which would snap in completely closed terminals with the preclear. Bang! And when that phenomenon of snap-in occurs, you would have the kind of product which they would really pull into themselves. Now, if you went around and kept a careful tally from door to door, all up and down the street, on what was really acceptable to this, and then advertised it on the radio, if the radio would permit you to advertise it, you would find that you had a product which was tremendously saleable, even though there was a public hue and cry about it. It's a craved product. Anything, there's a rule back of this, anything which is decried and inveighed against will eventually become a craved acceptability. Anything. Horrible to contemplate, isn't it? Let's look at what the society is inveighing against right now. That will be tomorrow's acceptance level. That which the society accepts today was definitely déclassé yesterday. We get this acceptance level in many manifestations, but for our purposes, we don't use it to change the preclear's consideration of life. I repeat that. This seems to be a very fine process by which you could really change your preclear's ideas all over the place. Yes, it will, but it, by experience, is too lengthy a process, because there are just too many objects. Because the truth of the matter is that what was originally desirable was pure mass. And as he began to be unable to accept pure mass, he more and more had to accept mass with qualification, significance, mass with significance. And then the significance deteriorated and deteriorated on that line that he said was deteriorated. It only deteriorated along the line which he declared was deteriorated. For instance, society started out with the idea that ugly women were best. Why, its deterioration would be to a point where they would only accept beautiful women. They start out at the beginning saying the bottom scale, they would wind up with the top scale, either one. So we must remember that the acceptance level goes two ways. Now, it's accompanied with the donor level. What would you give? And that is a deteriorated level, too. And you have to just keep going downscale and fishing around until you find out what the individual will give. But you'll make a terrific mistake if you only go downscale on rejection and donor. See, that's rejection level processing. We'll call it donor level because a fellow isn't rejecting, he's giving. All right, rejection level. What's rejectable by the preclear? And we find out fascination of fascination, wonder of wonders. Why, the man, when he mocks something up, which to you or anybody else would be obviously very desirable, he knows he can't have it. It snaps away from him to some unimaginable distance. Wham! Rejection levels. Totally automatic, depending on an automaticity with regard to this, because this is the woof and warp of automaticities when it comes to havingness. Havingness has all sorts of evaluations connected with it. And so we find out this individual, we want the acceptance level of cars. And we fish around, we fish around, and we say, well, how about mocking up an old 1912 Ford? Yeah. What's it doing? It's sitting there. With its fenders all bashed in, what's it doing? It's sitting there. A 1912 Ford that has been in a wreck and won't run and has no motor in it. What did it do? It snapped in. Gee whiz, this is getting pretty rugged, you say. Well, now, what's the rejection level of cars? a big, beautiful 18-cylinder 1955 Cackleheck. Chrome-plated and blonde-proofed. And you get this gorgeous limousine, and he finally builds it up. He'll get it out there for a moment, and then it'll go whee into the far distance. He can't have it. Now, this comes very socially significant when we take some wife, for instance, who keeps a poor house, you know, keeps everything cluttered up. And the husband objects to this. Well, by golly, if he only knew, he'd keep his mouth shut. Because the truth of the matter is that when you run acceptance level on the state of rooms and cleanliness and houses on this character, this wife, you're liable to find out that the only really acceptable residence is some knocked-together shanty out of pasteboard boxes down on the city dump with garbage poured all over it. Won't be acceptable or snap in until you get the garbage poured all over it, too. And this is really acceptable as a house. And we have them mock up their home, beautifully clean, and nicely done, and all repapered, and smoothly cared for, and dooted up in all directions, and it goes out into the far horizon. Wham! This woman is trying actively to get rid of that home. It is swept morning, noon, and night till she does something about it. Acceptance level of the home. All right, let's take some fellow, and he's married to a perfectly charming girl. She can cook, she likes kids, she takes care of everything, she's very socially adept, she's faithful, and everything else. And this guy is chasing over the hills and far away and shacked up, and even in Hollywood. I mean, he's just really degraded. And here he is, and you say, what on earth goes on here? Well, if you were to find this fellow and run acceptance level on him, you would probably discover that very far from being acceptable, that his wife is actually a rejection level, or something just a little bit better than his wife is a rejection level, and that his acceptability is some character who is dead drunk most of the time and has two or three social diseases. Yes, this is right. I mean, the acceptance level is somebody who is promiscuous, has venereal disease, is all caved in, and who is about 85. And they're going around desperately trying to find this character. They're trying to close mock-ups with the society at large, you see. This mock-up exists someplace, so they go around and try to find this mock-up. Well, in spite of all the fun this is, the truth of the matter is that its workability and processing is most workable only in the remedy of havingness. And when you start to remedy this person's havingness, let's say this old gal that he was so acceptable to him, you just have him mock this person up, mock her up, and pull her in, mock her up. One, two, three, four, however many he could get, eight. You could have him put up like anchor points around him and yanked in, but just one is enough. And by the way, certainty does not apply here. This is what's very curious about this whole thing. You don't have to have any certainty on the mock-up or whether it came in or anything else. The havingness will remedy, and that's all you're trying to do, you see. The havingness will remedy. The mock-ups can be thin, they can be filmy, they can be indefinite. He cannot be sure that they really snapped in, they really just disappeared. Snapped in, but he just didn't quite detect it. And so on, and you still run it. You see, it can no certainty in this havingness. We don't care about certainty with regard to havingness. That's the one place where we don't care about it. And we take this fellow and we have him mock up this horrible old bag several times, and the next thing you know, she is, at least by this time, she's a little younger. And then she's minus two or three of these diseases. And now she's snapping in, you see, and she's gotten much younger, and this time she's gotten down to the fact that she would bathe at least once a year. You know, acceptance level's rising. And finally, you will just run it right on up to where his acceptance level of women is at least on a parity with his wife. You could do this, you see, and you would remedy a considerable situation. However, an auditor ordinarily doesn't go at it this way because you are essentially, when you're doing this, remedying the heaviness of the GE. And we're not interested in doing that. But you could change the complete behavior of Homo sapiens with this. We had this as a process, and we were just treating Homo sapiens as such and so on, we would be tremendously successful. If we'd had this in 1950, we might even been able to teach it to the auditors. really because it's so fascinating to run. Now, you'd be surprised how much you've got to stir your imagination up in order to run acceptance level processing, because at first glance, you just wouldn't believe the acceptance level of people is what it is. You'd be flabbergasted. And you'll keep sitting there saying, well, did it snap in? The fellow says, no. And finally, they'll tell you, well, I just don't have this phenomenon of things snapping in. Oh, yes, they do. You just haven't been hot enough as an auditor to get something low enough, ratty enough, mean enough, horrible enough, and detestable enough to have it snap. Now, the remedy of anchor points similarly goes on this way with a thetan. You tell a thetan, now let's put up 8 gold anchor points and snap them in. And they don't come in. I can't get them in. Well, how about making them cracked and moldy? Yeah, they snapped in then. Or now, how about putting up 8 and have them be black? No, they don't snap in. See, that's not good enough. Have them be black with worms in them. Oh, they snap right in. See, something wrong with them. you have to fish around like that. The remedy of havingness is so important as a technique that an auditor who doesn't appreciate it and who isn't able to handle it will find himself utterly incapable of handling 8D, much less 8H, on which acceptance level utterly depends, and would not be able to keep all his pre-clears straight on 8C, where a remedy of havingness is held to nothing or a minimum. Sooner or later, he's going to see that hungry, hollow look come in the pre-clear's eye, and the pre-clear's going to start getting nervous, or frantic, or jittery, something of the sort, and the auditor's going to have to remedy his havingness. Now, in the remedy of havingness, another phenomenon occurs, which is known as avalanches. You can start avalanches on a pre-clear. You keep clearing up his havingnesses, clearing up his level of acceptance, and you're liable to start an avalanche of stars, planets, moons, suns, anything you can think of, just pouring in at a roaring rate, first probably from just one angle, straight in front of him in, and then from 360 degrees, and this avalanche can keep up for an hour, hours, for days, and is a remedy of havingness all the way on up the line. He's simply remedying the havingness of every planet he ever lost. Now, it seems like the mechanism is best handled by getting him to control it. After it's run for a little while, have him keep throwing new planets and stars and black stars and things into it till he himself is actually pulling in the avalanche. Then have him turn around and make it avalanche out, and then have him throw enough stuff into the avalanche as it flows out until he has that under control. He's sure that's his, because this avalanche is an automaticity which gives him things. He's got a machine, for heaven's sakes, which gives him things. Naturally, everybody's got a machine that gives him things. That's one of the things that automaticity is best dedicated to, giving you things. All these machines are donors of one kind or another. All right, we put this avalanche inflow and outflow of it under control. And having done so, he can turn it on or off at will. And at that time, we have to a large degree resolved his anxiety about having this. If we turn on an avalanche, let it run. Let it run as long as you want to run, as long as he's putting new planets into it. But remember to bring it eventually under his complete control. Don't go off and leave an avalanche just avalanching. And don't go off and leave the pre-clear in a state where you have started an avalanche and the avalanche has stopped, but it has never been put under the pre-clear's control. That is to say, he has never brought it in on his own self-determinism. He has never pushed it out on his own self-determinism, made it avalanche outwards, and has never been able to start, stop, and change this avalanche. To put anything under control, you only have to start, stop, and change it. Any control is on those three factors, start, stop, and change. Start, stop, and change, you got control. All right, the remedy of havingness, then, is very important. It is so important that if you were to know only one technique, if you were to know only one philosophy with which to considerably change and remedy lives, it would be, selecting it out really today, the remedy of havingness. That one you would pick up as it. In the first place, it's a terribly safe technique. You remedy havingness always into a more comfortable state of beingness. Although the individual sometimes gets heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier, if you just kept pouring it in, pouring it in, pouring it in, he might go up 30 pounds in weight, and has been known to do so as a result of remedying heaviness, but sooner or later he would simply key out the consideration, this stuff doesn't have to be this heavy, just by remedying heaviness. So it is a process which an auditor should be very, very good at, and which he should understand very, very thoroughly. And if he's good at it, if he understands it, and so on, his trouble with pre-clears will not be great. Now, you understand that there are butt-in cases way down there, resistive 28s, who haven't the ability to follow orders, you see. And so you can't remedy heaviness on him because, you see, you first have to have a two-way communication with a pre-clear to audit him, and then the next thing you know, he'd have to be able to execute an order. So if people don't do that, they can't remedy heaviness. So this is, in essence, the trouble you had run into with the remedy of heaviness. But you can always find something the pre-clear can mock up. I don't care how occluded he is. If he can follow an order, this is perforce in there. Now, for some reason or other, black stars, oh, at least big enough to put this solar system in a dozen times, seem to be particularly delicious. And this is because of a type of incident in space opera, the crash against the dark star. And you'll find this crash against the dark star showing up time after time after time with preclears. I'm sorry if it outrages any preclear's incredulity to find himself standing there on a bridge of a space wagon or something of this sort, expecting the crash momentarily. But so what? He'll just be astonished at it, remedy it as an automaticity, and just can carry on. You don't even have to run any backtrack or talk to him about it to do anything else. But you just make sure, when you're remedying having this, that somewhere along the line, throw him some dark stars. He's liable to get unstuck off the gravity of some planet, the like of which you'd never suspected before. And this is liable to be the final shreds of his occlusion, which turn on and off. Most of his occlusion very well may be prenatal area. If it's a prenatal area occlusion, which won't release, it's a black star occlusion. And if it's a black star occlusion that won't release, it basic is black space, endless distance as a barrier. And that's the stack, you might say, on occlusion. Endless black space, dark stars, wombs. And that's what the body would normally be expected to follow in terms of occlusion. These are the occlusions. The remedy of havingness, of course, remedies any kind of an incident, and so, of course, remedies an incident which is an occlusive incident. All occlusions amount to actually are the fellow's either in a dark place and doesn't know it and so can't see. That's the simplest kind of an occlusion. He's in the head and never occurs to him to light the head up so he can see it. It's awfully dark in people's heads. Or he actually isn't in his body at all. He's in some black space someplace. And he's really in the black space. A little bit of change of space remedies this very rapidly, but you can run change of space in such a person. He isn't really your dug-in resistive five. He's just in a black space and running the mock-up from some far distance. Once in a while, you start to run one of these things, and he comes into the body. Bing. And then you have to separate him out. But regardless of this, we don't care about the phenomena that takes place because your tools for handling this phenomena are assured. You can see all kinds of phenomena show up, our interest in phenomena. We have phenomena today. If 19th century psychology had 1/100,000th of the phenomena which we know about, we would see even their chairs of psychology well paid in universities. They would actually be able to cause enough excitement to have somebody pay some attention to them. Anything could happen. Yeah, I mean, I may exaggerate it, 1/100,000, it may be only 1/10,000. But it's in that order of magnitude. You talk about phenomena. I could sit down with a soundscriber and probably write straight out, flat out, and I talk fairly rapidly, as you will agree, for probably 4 or 5 years, just listing peculiar and strange manifestations which take place with relationship to the human mind. Fortunately, we don't have to care about any of them. What happens if the phenomenon shows up? You duplicate it. What happens if the fellow gets frantic? You remedy the havingness. What happens if he gets sick at his stomach? You remedy his havingness. What happens if an automaticity shows up while you're remedying his havingness? You duplicate it. That's all there is to it. Duplicate it several times. Remedying havingness always shows up phenomena, always shows up all kinds of things. Oh, past deaths, past lives, future, anything the sort's liable to show up and blow. If it surprises him, remedy as an automaticity. And you've remedied his happiness. Okay.